If you remember, in October, November time, we had Vision Sunday, and God gave us rebuilding ruins, building bridges, and creating culture. And we've spent a couple of months on the first two. And now it's time for us to start our next theme for a couple of months, which is creating culture. Creating culture. And I've actually got the longest title I've ever had for a message, which is creating a culture of wisdom and accountability. Hashtag was Samson stupid. There we go. That's my message title for you. And hopefully that'll make a bit more sense as we go along. So let me set a little scene for you, a little story for you, okay? You're watching a drama on the TV, and it's a little bit jumpy. It's a bit more jumpy, this program, than you thought it was. But you're hooked, you're loving it, but, you know, it's a little bit, oh, a bit scary. You're enjoying it, but you have decided the best thing to do is to hug a pillow, because that gives you a great sense of safety when all is going wrong. So you're holding a pillow and watching this program. And then there's this little slide comes up, please, AP. At one point, someone returns to their quite cheery-looking home. And they creep up to the front door, and they find that the door is slightly open. It's nighttime. What should they do? I wonder what they should do. You tell them blatantly, do not go in. Do not go in, you say. You find yourself saying to the TV screen. But they do go in. And not only that, they don't use the light switch. What's the point? Use the lights. You're saying, turn the lights on. What are you doing? You shouldn't have gone in, but now you really should turn the lights on. And they continue to creep around in the dark. Your pillow has gone from here to here. It's covering all of your face except your eyes. So once again, it's still not doing anything at all, but again, it's giving you a little bit of security. This is an incredibly old house, and there's a cellar. Oh, good. And as the person creeps through the house to the top of the cellar stairs, they look down, and the cellar door is just slightly open and banging in some strange breeze. What are you thinking? Let's have a look. Next slide, please. That's what you're thinking. Don't do it. What are you doing? Why would you do that? That is a ridiculous thing to do. Why are you starting to go down the stairs to investigate this situation? What are you doing? It's craziness. How about, I saw a film once where these people managed to overcome an assailant, and he was knocked onto the floor here. And they decide to have an embrace. An embrace? He's just here on the floor. He might not be knocked out. What's going on? Run away. But no, we'll have a little cuddle here just to celebrate that we're free. Turn around and he's gone. He's not there anymore, and now you've got to play the whole game again. Ridiculous. In those scenarios, we would always choose the right thing to do. As we're shouting at the TV, don't do that, do this, do that. We know the right thing to do. We know the thing that would save a life. We know what we would do in that situation. The obvious choice. And that's sometimes how I feel when I read the story of Samson and Delilah. I'm not shouting at the screen, but I do shout at my Bible. What are you doing? What are you doing? Let's go there, shall we? It's Judges chapter, I haven't written it down, 16? Yeah. Judges 16. AP, is this a permanent fail on this, on me doing it? Okay. Can you just pause the recording again for a sec, please? The story of Samson and Delilah. Samson is one of the judges who is ruling Israel, looking after Israel. And here's an interesting point I looked up with Samson and Delilah. The name Samson means sun, S-U-N. And Delilah is a wordplay on the Hebrew Layla, which means night. I find that interesting. I find that in this story, we find that the night overcomes the sun. The darkness overcomes the light. And that is not how it's supposed to be. Samson's one of the few people in Scripture whose birth is divinely pronounced to his parents. There's only four: Isaac, John the Baptist, Jesus, and Samson. He was born during a dark period of Israel's history, and seven times the nation of God had turned and found themselves under oppressive rule from the Philistines. Samson was a Nazarite. There were a few rules he had to live by, but three biggies were: he was never allowed to cut his hair. He wasn't allowed to drink wine. He wasn't allowed to touch or go near a dead body because he was set apart for God. Throughout his life and throughout his story, you see that he does all of those things. He drinks, he goes near dead bodies, he touches dead bodies, and he ultimately has his hair cut. Let's have a look. Judges 16 from verse 4. After this, he loved a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. And the lords of the Philistines came up to her and said to her, "Seduce him and see where his great strength lies, and by what means we may overpower him, that we may bind him to humble him. And we will each give you 1,100 pieces of silver." Judas did it for 30. She was going to get 1,100 from each of these men. So Delilah said to Samson, "Please tell me where your great strength lies and how you might be bound so that one could subdue you." Samson said to her, "If they bind me with 7 fresh bowstrings that have not been dried, then I shall become weak and be like any other man." Then the lords of the Pharisees brought up to her 7 fresh bowstrings that had not been dried, and she bound him with them. Now she had men lying in ambush in an inner chamber, and she said to him, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson." But he snapped the bowstrings as a thread of flax snaps when it touches the fire. So the secret of his strength was not known. Okay, just about here I'll be having some trust issues. Then Delilah said to Samson, "Behold, you have mocked me and told me lies." You kidding me? How about Samson says, "Delilah, I told you about the bowstrings. How come they're wrapped around me?" But no. "Please tell me how you might be bound." And he said to her, "If they bind me with new ropes that have not been used, then I shall become weak like any other man." So Delilah took new ropes and bound him, and then said to him, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson." And the men lying in ambush were in an inner chamber, but he snapped the ropes off his arms like a thread. Okay, Samson, that must be enough now. Have you got the thread? Do you know what's going on here? Then Delilah said to Samson, "Until now you have mocked me and told me lies. Tell me how you might be bound." And he said to her, "If you weave the 7 locks of my head with the web and fasten it tight with the pin, then I shall become weak and be like any other man." So while he slept, Delilah took the 7 locks of his head and wove them into the web, and she made them tight with the pin. And she said to him, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson." But he woke from his sleep, pulled away the pin, the loom, and the web. And she said to him, "How can you say I love you? When your heart is not with me, you have mocked me these 3 times and you've not told me where your great strength lies." And when she pressed him hard with her words day after day and urged him, his soul was vexed to death. And he told her all his heart and said to her, "A razor has never come upon my head, for I have been a Nazarite to God from my mother's womb. If my head is shaved, then my strength will leave me and I shall become weak and be like any other man." When Delilah saw that he had told her all his heart, she sent and called the lords of the Philistines, saying, "Come up again, for he has told me his heart." Then the lords of the Philistines came up to her and brought the money in their hands. She made him sleep on her knees, head on the lap, and she called a man and had him shave off the 7 locks of his head. Then she began to torment him, and his strength left him. And she said, "The Philistines are upon you, Samson." And he awoke from his sleep and said, "I will go out as at the other times and shake myself free." But he did not know that the Lord had left him. What a tragic line. And the Philistines seized him and gouged out his eyes and brought him down to Gaza and bound him with bronze shackles. And he ground at the mill in the prison. But the hair of his head began to grow again after it had been shaved. This is one of those stories, a bit like the scary house story, where you can read it and say, "Samson, what are you doing? What are you doing? Hashtag, is Samson stupid?" If I was Samson and Nikki said to me, "What's the secret of your strength?" And I said, "You know what, Nikki, if you paint my fingernails red, I will lose my strength." If I woke up in the morning with red fingernails and Nikki had a bottle of red nail polish next to her, I'd start to have trust issues. It seems just like that. But yet, it was Delilah who was upset with Samson, not the other way around. And that's why I've got that strap line. See, I wouldn't have trusted Delilah, would you? And after the first time, that would have been that, wouldn't it? We wouldn't tell the secret of our strength to Delilah, would we? Would we? Maybe we would. And I've always thought of Samson just as, you know, just terrible decisions, but maybe we would. Let's go on a bit further. What happened? What had happened to him? I think that the secret of it all stems from verse 5, when the lords of the Philistines said, "Seduce him." And I want us to stop and think today about the power of seduction. I know that seduction, normally we think of physical relationships. But seduction has more definitions than that. And one of the definitions, which hopefully will come up now, is to entice someone to do or believe something inadvisable or foolhardy. That's seduction. To entice someone to do or believe something inadvisable or foolhardy. So rather than say we wouldn't have done what Samson did, we wouldn't have fallen for Delilah's tricks, would we? I'm going to ask you a different question. What could seduce you? And then I'm going to ask an even deeper one. What does seduce you? What does seduce you? What entices you to do or believe things that are inadvisable or foolhardy? What entices you to do stupid things that you regret? You know, when I was younger, I used to go to the seafront with my nan and see these things. Had a little pot of 2p pieces. Oh, I used to love it. Put my 2p in. I'd hate it if I'd mistimed it. Oh, and you get it to land on the other coins. It's like, well, that was lame. Come on, Pete. It's simple enough. So I'd drop my coins in with my nan, and I used to love having a go on these 2p pusher things. And there was also one where, this is old school arcades, but this sort of revolving table of lines with money appeared on it, and you just roll your 2p down, and if it wasn't touching the black lines when it went through, you might get like 6p come back rolling down the glass at you. It was very, very exciting. Yeah. And what's really funny, actually, is when I was typing this up, I put coin pusher, but when I typed it up, I missed out the I, and I wrote it as con pusher. Oh, the irony. Yes. So during these formative visits in my life, I got seduced by the lights and the sounds and the promise of winning big. You see, seduction promises much but delivers little. And as I grew up, I would move on to the 5p fruit machines. Just 50p. Got 10 goes for 50p. That's pretty good. As a young teenager, I didn't win. I'm going to win with the next 50p. Oh, darn it. Now I've put in a pound. I've put in half my pocket money. Darn. I've got that nauseous feeling in my stomach that tells me that the next person who comes along is going to put 5p in and win the jackpot. They're not having that. I've put a pound in, I'm having this jackpot. I'm putting in another 50p. I've got 50p left for the week. I can get a couple of quarters of strawberries and cream and rhubarb and custard. That'll have to do. Didn't win. Put in the last 50p. Didn't win. All for a potential jackpot of a fiver. That's ridiculous. Seduced by the lights and the sounds and the potential of winning big. But it promised much and it delivered little. By the time I was 16, I got a job at a local newsagent's. And for a few months, I'd get paid at the end of the day. I'd cycle down to Southend Seafront and spend all the money. It's ridiculous. I used to feel sick cycling down there. I used to feel sick while I was doing it. I felt gutted and annoyed with myself cycling home. But I couldn't stop myself. Would I have told my secrets to Delilah? Maybe I would. Thankfully, after a few months, I broke out of it. And although sometimes they try and call me if I walk past on a ferry or in a service station, I will not go near one and I will never touch one of those things. I don't go anywhere near them anymore. Thank you, God. So I'll ask you again, what could seduce you? And what does seduce you? What has seduced you? A person? A career move? A salary? A 6-month interest-free offer on a card? An addictive pattern or behavior in your life. Proverbs 26:11 says this: as a dog returns to its vomit, so a fool repeats his foolishness or her foolishness. What is the foolish stuff that you find yourself repeating? Vomit's bad for us. It's in there and we've got to get it out and we forcefully eject it from our bodies. Why do we sometimes go back to it? The stuff that we've dealt with and we've got rid of in our lives, we can still find ourselves just returning to it. And we can read passages like that and go, I would never do that. But I know that personally I do. And I'm trying to learn and to grow up and to get to a point where I don't return to my vomit. But how do we overcome this power of seduction? Because in 2 Peter 2, Peter is writing about false teachers, but he says they promise freedom, but they themselves are slaves of sin and corruption. And then this bit's the key: for you are a slave to whatever controls you. It was for freedom that Christ has set us free, and I love to say that line. But you are a slave, and I am a slave to whatever controls you, whatever controls me. And we want to find ourselves breaking free from that. So what's Samson stupid? Before this week, I was saying yes. I've been saying yes for years. I'm now saying no. Was he weak when it came to women? Yeah. Delilah wasn't the first woman in his story. Did he make some stupid mistakes? Yes. And although we can see the crazy unfolding of his story, and we can shout at the pages of our Bible as we read it, "Don't do it, Samson," sometimes we make crazy decisions of our own too. And I've therefore concluded, I was sitting having my lunch on Friday and these two little words came to me. I've concluded this: seduction blinds. Seduction blinds. And I think that point is really made clear as I was thinking about it at the end of the story, when Samson's eyes were literally taken from him. But it got me thinking as I ate my jacket potato. Perhaps seduction had already blinded him earlier in the story. And now we're starting to see a physical manifestation of what had already happened in his life. We can all see the wise choices that others should take. But we can so easily be blind to our own bad choices. I think this is really critical. Because when we were watching that scary film, we all know what they should do. When we read Samson, we know what they should do. When we look around at our friends and things and they're making decisions that we think are bad, we know what they should do. But I think quite often we're blind to what we should do. We're blind to our own decisions. We have choices in life. I'm not going to use them. I had a little thing over there I was going to bring up here. But you get the gist. You could choose to do something good or do something bad. All your friends, everybody around you will say, pick the good choice. Pick the choice that brings life. Pick the choice that is light. And yet you wander towards this path. Proverbs puts it really clearly that we sort of wander towards the grave of darkness, of death, of bad decisions. And we walk this way kind of like a moth to a flame. In fact, I've got one of those for you now. Let's have a look.
I can't help it. It's so beautiful.
There we go. Nice little clip for you. His friend's saying, don't do it. Harry, don't do it. I can't help it. It's so beautiful. See what I mean? You can make good decisions for other people, but sometimes you're blind to your own things. It's also true of the sirens of Greek mythology, that they had an enchanted voice and they would lure sailors to shipwreck themselves on rocks. They would lure them in. And once they were enticed and kind of hypnotized by their song, the myth went that they would be drawn in towards the voice and ultimately smash themselves up on the rocks. I think that's how seduction works. It wants to smash us up on the rocks. And if you're struggling with the word seduction still because you think of it in the other way normally, then just bad decisions. Things that entice us to make bad decisions. They want to see harm in our lives. So how are we going to get away from that into another way of living then? How do we develop a culture of wisdom and accountability? Well, let's look at it. Let's look into Proverbs. I've got lots of verses that are going to fly up here. So Proverbs 1 says that we're encouraged to acquire wisdom. Fear of the Lord is the foundation of true knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and discipline. So let's fear our God. Let's fall more in love with his awesomeness and how incredible he is. If we can love our God with all of our being, then we're going to find that we gain wisdom as we draw close to him, and we're going to make wiser decisions. Verse 8 of Proverbs 1 says, my child, listen when your father corrects you and don't neglect your mother's instruction. I think that goes beyond just mothers and fathers. Listen to people. Listen to people who love you and don't neglect their instruction. Verse 10 says, my child, if sinners entice you, turn your back on them. There was a time I had to turn my back on the arcades down in Southend Seafront. I had to make a deliberate decision. I cannot go down there. And if my friends go down there, I cannot go. I have to sit at home on my own. I just can't do it for my own sake. Verse 20 says, wisdom shouts in the streets. She cries out in the public square. She calls to the crowds along the main street, to those gathered in front of the city gate. Wisdom is shouting on the street corners. Wisdom is desperate to be heard, the Proverbs say. How? How does she shout to us if she's a she? How does wisdom get our attention? I believe in a number of ways. First of all, from God himself and his spirit living in us. Do you not know? Have you not heard? It says in Isaiah 40. The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired or weary, and his understanding no one can fathom. God is wisdom. God is wise. He shouts to us. He calls out to us. He knows the way. The voice of his spirit alive and at work in us, giving discernment. You know, although Samson had been blinded over here in the story, there were lots of decisions here where he would have heard the discerning voice of God, but he decided to ignore it. Let's listen and tune in to the voice of wisdom that lives in us if we know and love Jesus, that voice that helps us to know the way forward, helps us to know the way to go. How else does wisdom shout at us? Through the power of the words in the scriptures, in the Bible. And we need to get our Bibles into our hearts. We need to know it. We need to read it so that Holy Spirit can remind us of something that will guide us in the right direction when we're about to choose a wrong thing. James 3:17 says, but the wisdom that comes from heaven is first of all pure, then peace-loving, considerate, submissive, full of mercy and good fruit, impartial and sincere. That wisdom that God wants to give us, I want to pick up on the good fruit. Is what we're going to do if we make this decision, is this going to bear good fruit? Is this wise? Or is this going to bear bad fruit in our lives? Can this only go one way? God is calling out to us. Wisdom is shouting on the street corners. James 1:5 says, does anyone lack wisdom? If you need wisdom, ask our generous God and he will give it to you. Not he might, if he feels like it. If you ask for wisdom, he will give it to you and he will not rebuke you for asking. So if you're looking at a career progression that may have seduced you, but it might take all of your time away from your family and it might just draw you to be a person that you weren't intending to be. As you're going towards this, say, God, is this what you really have for me? Give me your wisdom. Lord, I ask. James 1:5, I ask for wisdom in this situation and God will give you wisdom. Wisdom is shouting on the street corners to help you make good decisions. Pete, if it were that easy, we'd all be doing it already. Maybe. I called this talk, Creating a Culture of Wisdom and Accountability. And I think that the final piece of the jigsaw today is that accountability will help us to be wise. Accountability will also help us to be wise. Proverbs 27:17, just as iron sharpens iron, so a friend sharpens a friend. We're supposed to rub on each other and sharpen each other up. That's what we're supposed to do. That sounds to me like an abrasive, maybe sometimes irritating feeling. Ouch. But that's what deep friendships in this church family need to look like. Deep friendships in this church family need to look like iron sharpening iron. It's not about us looking at how others are living their lives and sticking our noses in where they're not wanted or not needed. I'm not saying that. This is about deep, deliberate, loving friendships that have been invested into and care for each other. Okay, so if you have pharisaical tendencies and you think I'm giving you permission to look around and say, you shouldn't be doing that, you shouldn't be doing that, that is not what I'm saying. I'm saying that we need to develop relationship with people who love us, who care for us, who want the best of us, and then we need to be able to hear them speak into our lives. Bev has always given this analogy, Bev Murrell always gave this analogy of making a withdrawal from a bank. And you can only take out what you've already put in. And that's true in accountable relationships. If you're in a deep relationship where you've invested time and love and energy into each other, then if you have to bring the hard word, if you have to make a withdrawal from that relationship that hurts, you've got enough in the bank to make it happen. If you just point at somebody you don't know and tell them how they should live their life, they're going to tell you where to go. This is about accountable, loving relationships. I've shouted at the TV, don't do that. I've moaned at Samson that he's ridiculous, and yet I return to my own vomit when others would have given me good counsel to not go. I think when we're blinded by seduction or we're just making bad choices in our lives, other people can often see more clearly than we can. It's another way that wisdom in the family of God shouts on the street corners through the Holy Spirit, through the Word, but also through our family, through our wise friends who we are vulnerable with. Proverbs 19:20 says, listen to advice and accept instruction, and in the end, you'll be wise. I think this is a challenge to us all, to listen to the people that we are accountable to rather than be offended by them. You know, if ever you're making the blind decision, you don't want to hear. You don't want to hear it from other people. You know what, mate? Can we just have a talk? I've been looking at what's going on here. I think that's a bad move that you're making there. I think you'd be much better off walking in this direction. Should we go this way? To be offended by that is such a natural thing. Who do you think you are? Who do you think you are? Don't tell me what to do. And it's just that I love you, mate. I just want to see the best for you. Please don't interfere with my life. Let me make my own decisions. You see, if we're going to be accountable, that's one thing. But if we can get ourselves to a point of vulnerable accountability, and that's a phrase we're using quite a bit as we look at discipleship moving forward, vulnerable accountability, then we're going to be in a much stronger place. You see, accountability could well say, I give you full authority to speak into all of these areas of my life, but do not touch these. I'm accountable to a point. I tell them what I think they want to hear. Vulnerable accountability says, okay, I'm letting you into my heart. As we walk through life together, these are the issues I'm struggling with. Oh, I don't even like to say it. I've said it. Okay, good. These are the things you've heard. Do you still love me? Good. Okay, first obstacle out of the way. Now we can move forward. I want to be vulnerable and say, I'm struggling with this. This is a stronghold in my life, and I don't want it to become a stranglehold that takes me out. So can you please help me as we move forward? If I'm making decisions that are ridiculous, and for some reason I seem to have blinkers on, I'm going like a moth to a flame, I give you full permission in our loving relationship to pull me back and say, do not go that way. That is not the way you should go. I love you and I'm not going to let it happen to you. It takes time to develop culture. And vulnerably accountable relationships do not happen overnight. It's going to take courage from us all to be able to stand up and speak into our friends' lives. Not to control them, but to say, this is what I see. And it's going to take courage for the recipient to hear when you really don't want to hear. Because quite often you'd have already heard the discerning voice already, and you're trying to switch it off. So now your friend's going to come and join in too. It's going to take courage to hear it. But we want to develop a culture of wisdom and of accountability, so that we can't be seduced by the work of the enemy. And by the way, there's very good news if you've screwed up. Samson screwed up all the way through his life until the last minute when his strength returned to him and he was able to take out a load of Philistines in his last move that killed him, killed Delilah, and killed thousands of people too. When God returned to him, But the good news is this, that in Hebrews 11, there's a huge long list of heroes of the faith. And Samson's name is in there. I'm like, hero of the faith? Are you kidding me? And then I felt God say to me, as I've said that in the past, you don't want me to be kidding because you want to be on there too. I'm like, oh, good point. That isn't a license to do whatever you like with your life and know that you'll be on God's list of heroes. You may well already be on his list, but you don't want to spend your life with your eyes gouged out sitting in a prison. God's got freedom for us all and great plans for us. But if you have screwed up, if you have been seduced, if you've made some really bad decisions, and they're much worse than spending money in an arcade. You know, that's just one example. You may have made really terrible decisions as you were seduced by something and you really regret what you have done. You can still be listed by your God as a hero of the faith. His grace and his mercy is so powerful and so much more strong than the judgment. So if you screwed up, let's keep going. Let's dust ourselves off. Let's dust each other off and keep moving forward. Let's be a church family here at Skylark who develop a culture of wisdom and accountability. Hashtag, Samson wasn't stupid after all. He was just like us. That's a long hashtag. Thank you very much.